The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Anesthetics can cause confusion. Question. Recently, two family members had surgery. Although the surgeries were different, the family members had similar unexpected complications upon awakening. They suffered hallucinations, memory impairment, and cognitive difficulties after anesthesia. I did some independent research and found that this can happen. Sometimes the memory is regained and the person completely recovers. Excuse me. Other times, the person never completely regains full cognitive function. Are some anesthesia drugs more prone to cause this than others? Answer. Doctors call this condition POCD, postoperative cognitive dysfunction. It is most common in the days and weeks immediately following surgery, but even months later, some people have measurable cognitive decline. And that's cited in Clinical Interventions in Aging Online, November 8, 2018. A recent prospective randomized controlled trial of 164 patients found that propofol was less likely to cause postoperative cognitive dysfunction than midazolam or dexmedetomidine. And that's from the China Medical Journal, January 30, 2019. A review of the available research compared intravenous propofol with inhaled anesthetics, and that's cited in the Cochrane Database of Systemic Reviews, August 21, 2018. The authors concluded there is a lack of high-quality research, but propofol appears to offer an advantage for reducing POCD. Question. My doctor has prescribed a number of statins to lower my cholesterol. Simvastatin caused pain on top of pain. Lovastatin, which was Mevacor, was okay for several weeks, but it too eventually caused both muscle and joint pain. What else can I take to make my doctor stop prescribing statins? Answer. Consider adopting a diet that includes almonds and other nuts, soy protein instead of red meat, and viscous fibers from plants like okra, eggplant, barley, oats, and psyllium. Canadian researchers found that such a diet is as effective as lovastatin for lowering cholesterol, and that's cited in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, February 2005. What's more, it lowers C-reactive protein, a measure of inflammation. That's cited in JAMA, July 23, 2003. A meta-analysis of 7 trials shows that this dietary approach works well to lower LDL cholesterol and other cardiovascular risk factors without side effects, and that's cited in Progress in Cardiovascular Diseases, May, June 2018. Ice remedy for cold sores resurfaces. With regard to treating cold sores, I use pure vanilla. At the first sign of a cold sore, I pour a small amount of vanilla extract on a cotton ball and hold it on the cold sore for 1 or 2 minutes. If I do this a couple of times a day, the cold sore heals quickly. Answer. We have been unable to find any scientific studies to explain why vanilla extract might be helpful against herpes labialis or cold sores. This may be an urban legend, or it simply might not have been studied. However, several readers report that applying ice helps heal cold sores faster. One person wrote, "Until I was in my late 30s, I used to get cold sores every winter. Back then, there were no antivirals or pain medicine to treat them. Somehow along the way, I found a way to keep them at bay. At the first tingle, I'd put several ice cubes in a plastic sandwich bag and held it over the offending area. I kept this up for anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes. Sores didn't fully develop when I did this. Nowadays, I rarely have an occurrence, and if I do, it's mild. Any explanation as to why this might work? We have found no explanation for its possible effectiveness, but we did find a very brief flurry of letters about ice for cold sores in The Lancet in 1978 and 79. It began when a physician recommended applying ice for 90 to 120 minutes within the first 24 hours of an outbreak. Question. I have arthritis in my knees and back. To minimize that pain, I have been using hemp oil, rosemary, and turmeric. I created a shaker with rosemary, turmeric, and black pepper, which I use on my eggs and salads. Hemp oil is my replacement for olive oil and butter. I drizzle the hemp oil on toast and shake my rosemary turmeric mix onto it. This is an intriguing combination. Rosemary and turmeric both have anti-inflammatory properties, which may be why your arthritis is less painful. Adding black pepper to your mixture along with hemp oil aids the absorption of turmeric. To learn more about these and other ancient healing herbs, you may wish to consult our book, Spice Up Your Health. From Parade Magazine, Stay Healthy, How to Prevent Major Eye Disease, 5 Ways to Keep Your Eyes Healthy as You Age. As we age, our eyes age too, and the risk of eye diseases and conditions, many with no warning signs, climbs. That's why experts stress the importance of an annual comprehensive eye exam for everyone over age 50. Just as you'd visit an internist for your annual health checkup, it's equally important to have your eyes checked each year, even if you're not experiencing any vision problems, says Divya Sirakumaran, MD, Medical Director at Johns Hopkins Wilmer Eye Institute in Odenton, Maryland. Though it's true that early detection and treatment can help protect and even save your vision, so can living a healthy life. Keeping your eyes healthy is as important as keeping the rest of you healthy, says Michelle Andrioli, MD, clinical spokesman for the American Academy of Ophthalmology. These tips can help. Number one, don't smoke or hang around secondhand smoke. The links between smoking and heart disease and lung cancer are well known, but did you know that smoking or being exposed to secondhand smoke can also harm your eyes and lead to vision loss? Smoking interferes with the manufacture of a chemical necessary to help you see at night. It also increases the risk for many major eye disorders, including age-related macular degeneration, glaucoma, and cataracts. The proof is in the numbers. Smokers have a 4 times greater risk of developing macular degeneration than non-smokers. If you live with a smoker, your risk for macular degeneration is still high. It almost doubles. Heavy smokers, more than 15 cigarettes per day, also have a 3 times greater risk for developing cataracts than do non-smokers. Number two, eat a healthy diet. Is it an old wives' tale that eating carrots is good for your eyes? Not exactly. While carrots can improve your eyesight, they can keep your vision healthy thanks to vitamin A. But A is not the only good vitamin good for your eyes, says registered dietitian Bonnie Taub Dix, author of Read It Before You Eat It, taking you from label to table. The foods we eat have a tremendous impact on our eye health. Green leafy vegetables and eggs are both high in lutein and zeaxanthin, nutrients that have been found to reduce the risk of chronic eye diseases like macular degeneration and cataracts. She says other eye-healthy foods include salmon, a potent source of omega-3 fatty acids, Brussels sprouts and grapefruit, rich in vitamin C, nuts and seeds which contain vitamin E, and shellfish and whole grains, powerful sources of zinc which transports vitamin A from the liver to the retina to produce melanin, a protective pigment in the eye. The Mediterranean diet has been associated with helping slow the progression of AMD, or macular degeneration, age-related macular degeneration, according to a 2017 study. It includes fruits, vegetables, fatty fish like salmon and sardines, olive oil, nuts, and other healthy fats. Number three, cover up. Sunglasses and hats are more than just fashion accessories. They help protect your eyes from the sun's ultraviolet rays, which can cause molecular damage and increase the risk for age-related macular degeneration and cataracts. The American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends wearing dark sunglasses that block 99 or 100% of all UV light. Some labels will say UV absorption or ultraviolet absorption up to 400 nm, which means there is 100% UV absorption. If your glasses aren't at 100%, plastic and glass lenses can be treated with a special chemical to improve their UV absorption rating. Note, polarized lenses are not the same as UV protective lenses. They have a special filter for reducing glare but may not provide maximum UV protection. Number four, exercise. We all know it's good for the mood, metabolism, and overall health, but exercise can decrease the risk of many eye conditions, including cataracts, wet age-related AMD, and glaucoma, research says. In fact, people who regularly exercise three or more times a week have a lower risk of developing wet age-related AMD, a more serious type in which blood vessels leak fluid and blood under the retina and can damage central vision, according to a study published in the British Journal of Ophthalmology. As age-related macular degeneration progresses, it may be harder to read or to drive at night, and objects may not be as bright as they used to be, says Craig C., MD, an ophthalmologist at Cleveland Clinic's Cole Eye Institute. Exercise also benefits your eyes because it can decrease your risk of developing other health problems that can lead to vision problems like diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. And finally, number five, keep blood sugar in check. If you have diabetes and your blood sugar is too high for too long, the blood vessels in your retina can swell, leak, or grow abnormally, affecting vision in both eyes, says C. The longer you've had diabetes, the greater your risk of developing an eye disease known as diabetic retinopathy, which can affect anyone with type 1, type 2, or gestational diabetes, and is the leading cause of blindness among working-age adults. People with well-controlled sugars will probably never have the complication of eye problems from their diabetes, C says, which is why careful management is so crucial. Diabetes also can put you at risk for developing glaucoma and cataracts, Andreoli says. IQEYE-Q. AMD and age-related macular degeneration, damage to a part of the retina known as the macula, causes a loss in central vision. Currently, treatment exists only for one type, wet AMD, which is less common but more serious. Cataracts occur when there is a breakdown in normal proteins in the lens of the eye, which naturally happens around age 40, and worsens in time, causing cloudy, blurry, or double vision, light sensitivity, and trouble seeing well at night. Glaucoma, pressure from the buildup of fluid in the front part of the eye, causes damage to the eye's optic nerve. Eye pain, blurred vision, and eye redness are symptoms. Finally, diabetic retinopathy, uncontrolled high blood pressure, uncontrolled high blood sugar can damage blood vessels in the retina. Symptoms can include vision loss, spots or dark floaters, and reduced color vision. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, vaccinations, recommendations for older adults. The need for vaccinations doesn't end after childhood. Each year, people die or are injured by diseases that could have been prevented by basic adult vaccinations. While the vaccines you need depend on your health, medical history, and risk of exposure to illnesses, here's a look at those considered routine for most adults 50 and older. Recommended for everyone, flu. Caused by the influenza virus, flu is a highly contagious viral respiratory disease. Recommendation: vaccination is recommended for people of all ages. The circulating flu virus changes its structure each year, so an annual vaccination is needed. The injectable vaccine does not contain live virus. Shingles. Shingles, or herpes zoster, is a painful localized skin rash, often with blisters, that's caused by the same varicella zoster virus that causes chickenpox. The virus remains in the nerve cells after a chickenpox infection. Recommendation: the zoster vaccine can help prevent shingles in adults, even if they don't recall having had chickenpox. There are two vaccines, Zostavax and Shingrix. Shingrix is newer, more effective, and preferred by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Shingrix vaccine is recommended for adults 50 and older, whether or not they've previously had chickenpox or shingles. People who've had a Zostavax vaccine should also be vaccinated with Shingrix. Let me repeat that because this is very important. If you've had the Zostavax vaccine some years ago, you should get the Shingrix vaccine because it's just much, much more effective. Tetanus and diphtheria. Tetanus is a bacterial infection that develops in contaminated wounds. Diphtheria is primarily a bacterial throat infection spread by breathing infected droplets. Recommendation: a tetanus diphtheria, or TD, toxoid booster shot is recommended every 10 years. If you have a deep or dirty wound, you may need a booster shot if your last vaccination was more than 5 years ago. If you've never had a tetanus shot, you may need a three-dose series. The vaccine Tdap, T-D-A-P, which also includes whooping cough, which is a cellular pertussis, is recommended as a one-time booster shot and replaces one of the TD boosters. Whooping cough is a highly contagious respiratory infection that causes uncontrollable coughing. While generally not a serious risk to adults, the disease is easily spread to infants for whom it may be life-threatening. Recommended based on health risks: Haemophilus influenza type B. Haemophilus influenza type B, or HIB, is a type of bacteria that can cause infections in people of all ages. Recommendation: the vaccine is recommended for adults who may be at increased risk of the disease who haven't been previously vaccinated. This includes people who have sickle cell disease, leukemia, or HIV infection, or who've had their spleen removed. Hepatitis A. This viral liver disease is usually spread by eating or drinking contaminated food or water or by close personal contact. Recommendation: the two-dose vaccination is recommended for people who live in or will be traveling to places where the disease is prevalent, such as countries in Africa and Asia, and caregivers of someone adopted from a country where hepatitis A is common. It is also recommended for those who work in a lab doing hepatitis research, for those who have chronic liver disease or clotting factor disorder, and for those who use illegal drugs, and for men who have sex with men. Hepatitis B. Hepatitis B is a viral liver disease spread by infected blood or bodily fluids. Recommendation: the vaccination is given in three doses. It's recommended for people who travel to places where the disease is prevalent, people with household or sexual contact with someone infected with hepatitis B, and health care and public safety workers at risk of exposure of bodily fluids. It's also recommended for people with chronic liver disease, kidney disease, HIV infection, or diabetes, for sexually active people who aren't in long-term monogamous relationships, and for any adult who wants to be protected from hepatitis B. Meningococcal disease. Meningococcal disease, caused by bacteria, can cause a bloodstream infection and an infection of the brain and spinal cord coverings, which is meningitis. Recommendation: vaccination is recommended for people with HIV or damaged or removed spleens, and for travelers to countries where the disease is a concern. There are two types of meningococcal vaccines. One protects against four strains of meningococcal disease, and another protects only against meningococcal B. Pneumococcal disease. Pneumococcal disease is a serious bacterial infection that can cause pneumonia, bloodstream infections, ear infections, sinusitis, and meningitis. Recommendation: adults 65 and older should receive two pneumococcal vaccines. The PCV13 vaccine is generally recommended first, and the PPSV23 vaccine a year later. Vaccination with both is recommended for adults of any age who have received an organ transplant, have an impaired immune system, or have had their spleens removed. The PPSV23 vaccine alone is recommended for those who have a chronic medical condition such as asthma, diabetes, or heart, lung, or kidney disease, or who smoke tobacco. People who receive the PPSV23 vaccine at age 65 or later and who are generally healthy need only one shot. Those who receive their first PPSV23 vaccine before age 65 will need another dose of the vaccine after they turn 65. Other vaccines may be recommended if you plan to travel outside of the country. Radiation from imaging tests. Putting risk into perspective. There are wide-ranging benefits to the use of modern X-ray imaging technology, which uses radiation to generate images of inside your body. It can provide a quick and painless diagnosis or guide treatment, such as determining artery opening, stent placement. With so many benefits, it's not surprising that the use of X-ray imaging has dramatically increased in the past 30 years, mainly as a result of technical advances and an increased use of computerized tomography, or CT, and positron emission tomography, PET, scans. Likewise, the average amount of lifetime radiation exposure has also increased. The downside is that radiation can cause damage to and mutation of DNA. This might lead to the development of certain cancers, but at what level does radiation exposure from medical imaging increase the risk of future cancer? The answer to this question isn't clear-cut, and it's important to weigh the potential risk against the known benefits of medical imaging. Radiation levels. Radiation is naturally present in the environment, coming from sources such as the sun and radon and rocks and soil. The average annual exposure in the U.S. from all sources of natural radiation is estimated to be about 3 millisieverts, MSV, per person. Millisieverts. However, you may be exposed to more or less depending on where you live. Exposure from natural radiation varies from 1 to 20 MSVs in the U.S. It's estimated that the average annual amount of radiation exposure, a combination of natural and medical exposure in the U.S., has roughly doubled since the 1980s to about 6.2 MSVs. This value is an average over the entire population. If you've not had any medical exams that use radiation, your radiation exposure is not increased. It is not known at what levels radiation begins to significantly increase cancer risk. Below 100 MSVs, an increase in risk has not been shown to exist. However, by scaling the risk at higher doses down to lower doses, it has been estimated that 10 MSV of radiation exposure could increase the lifetime risk of an adult dying of cancer by about 0.05%. With a 21% overall lifetime risk of dying of cancer, 10 MSV of radiation exposure could theoretically raise the lifetime risk of dying of cancer to 21.05%. This is a small amount concerning the benefits of medically needed imaging tests. The bottom line: the potential for an increased risk of cancer due to medical exams using radiation is very small, so there's no reason to forego an imaging test or X-ray assisted procedure that could better your health or prolong your life. This is especially true for older adults, as potential radiation-caused cancer development may not occur for decades. Also consider that CT and PET scanners in use today use a much lower radiation dose than was used even just a few years ago. Radiation doses are further kept to a minimum when the dose is tailored specifically to body size and diagnostic requirements. Still, in general, radiation experts err on the side of caution. Hence, they assume that there's no risk-free level of radiation exposure and recommend only medically necessary imaging tests. Steps to keep medical radiation exposure to a minimum include: when the need for a scan or test isn't obvious, ask if the results are likely to change your course of your treatment. If not, it may not be necessary. If you switch doctors, have imaging files transferred over to your new doctor to avoid repeat X-ray exams. When possible, have your exam at a nationally accredited imaging center. And finally, follow instructions before your exam and hold still during it so that it's not necessary to repeat the tests. Varying exposure. The following table lists an estimated average amount of radiation exposure for select medical tests and procedures as compared with exposure from natural sources. So I'm going to read the test, and then I'll read the average dose in millisieverts. The test, procedure, or natural radiation source. Yearly exposure from natural sources, 1 to 20. Knee x-ray, 0.005. Dual energy x-ray absorptiometry, or DXA, ADEXA, 0.04. Chest x-ray, 0.1. Mammogram, 0.4. A head CT, 1 to 2. Virtual colonoscopy with CT scan, less than 3. Chest CT, 2 to 4. Colon x-ray using barium, 6 to 8. Stress test with scan involving injection of radioactive material, 10 to 12. Finally, coronary catheterization with imaging of the arteries of the heart and stent placement, 15. Second opinion, is there a safe way to remove skin tags on my own? Answer, there's no shortage of suggested ways to remove skin tags on store shelves, but the best route to removal is to visit your doctor. Skin tags are non-cancerous, flesh-colored growths that protrude from the skin, often in a narrow stalk. They're common, particularly as you age. They're also commonly seen in those who are pregnant or have diabetes. Occurrence also runs in families. Skin tags are often found around the neck or armpits or generally in places of friction, such as where skin folds together. Although usually harmless, they can become irritated when they catch on jewelry or rub on clothing. Sharp pain can sometimes develop if the skin tag becomes twisted, cutting off blood supply to the tag. Whether you want a skin tag removed because it is irritating or for appearance reasons, it's important to talk to your doctor about it because skin tags can resemble other skin issues that may be treated differently. Bleeding, infection, and scarring can occur. It may hurt to cut off a larger skin tag. A numbing injection can make the process more comfortable. And finally, depending on its shape and location, your doctor may snip a skin tag off with surgical scissors, burn it off with electrical current, or freeze it off with liquid nitrogen. So next time we are going to discuss from the Wall Street Journal, Tech May Cure Patient ID's Woes, and Hear Better, Think Better. So we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.